take you out of this place. Someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters Radio Show. I'm Neil De Silva. It's Monday. It's the 20th of January 2020. This is show 84 and I hope you've all had a great weekend and you're looking forward to the week ahead. On today's show, we are going to be having a chat about anxiety and also about panic attacks. And we'll also talk towards the end of the show about vitamin K as well. And in the middle, our guest interview for today is Lorraine Crooks from Shelkey. And Lorraine is an energy alignment mentor and tantric massage practitioner. Good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to finding out more about what you do and how you help people. And we'll come back to Lorraine in about 20 minutes or so.
Cool, forward to it.
So a quick disclaimer before we kick the show off. The purpose of the show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters that we cover and to help educate and inform you in ways that you could improve your own health. But this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your adrenal health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist first. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion. And as such, I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. If you'd like to interact with the show, the show's social media feeds on Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search The Health Matters Radio Show. And you'll be able to listen to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And equally, if you like to listen to podcasts, go to iTunes, type in The Health Matters Radio Show into the iTunes search bar, and all the shows are there too. So we're going to talk for a little while about anxiety. Now, I talk about a lot about physical health on the show, but there is obviously a massive connection between physical health and mental health and vice versa. So spoken about mental health conditions in the past, but I thought I would focus specifically for the next 15 minutes just on the topic of anxiety, because anxiety seems to be becoming more and more prevalent in our society today. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about what it is and equally what it isn't, and how you can help yourself if you suffer with anxiety and how you can help others around you if they struggle with anxiety and panic attacks as well. So anxiety itself is actually quite normal when it's limited and it's infrequent and it's under control. So we all suffer some sort of anxiety. So we get that nervousness before maybe an exam or maybe a competition or maybe doing a presentation or maybe we're meeting someone for the first time or, you know, maybe we're coming onto a radio show. That anxiety, you know, it's there. It's that anticipation. It's that nervousness. And it's the way our body helps us to face that particular challenge. So our heart pumps more blood and oxygen around our body. Maybe a bit of cortisol gets released, the hormone, the fight or flight, and in some cases, the feed hormone. But this is our body preparing us for this particular challenge. So that anxiety is absolutely normal. When it becomes abnormal is when our happiness or our health or our safety becomes threatened. And maybe this anxiety becomes disruptive in our life. Perhaps it becomes overwhelming. And maybe it actually happens for no identifiable reason. And perhaps it lasts a long time. You know, it doesn't just come and go. It's constant. It's many times a day. That's when it becomes a problem. So when we look at anxiety, we're talking specifically now about anxiety disorders. So if you've got an anxiety disorder, it's disruptive to your life. It's perhaps overwhelming. It controls your life. Maybe, as I say, maybe it happens when there is absolutely no stress and you just have an anxiety attack for no particular reason. Or maybe the symptoms are so severe that it really does affect the quality of your life. And some of the physical symptoms of anxiety include things like a fast heartbeat. Maybe it feels like your heart is pounding out of your chest. Perhaps you're sweating. Shaking, maybe shortness of breath, maybe chest pains, maybe you start to feel a bit dizzy, or you have hot flushes, or you start to feel detached from reality, or you feel a feeling of losing control, or that you're perhaps going a bit crazy, or maybe in more severe cases as well, you have those feelings of death. You know, it can get that serious. So anxiety is generally classified into different types of disorders. So we're going to talk about some of those for a moment now. Now, these aren't in any particular order, so they're not in order of seriousness or severity or priority. But I'm sure some of these you'll identify with, and perhaps you can identify with some people around you that do struggle with some of these anxiety disorders. So a common one is phobias. Now, phobias are essentially irrational fears. So often people that struggle with a phobia will realise that their fear is irrational, but they can't do anything about it, or they feel they can't do anything about it. And actually just thinking about the thing that they fear the most can bring on that panic attack or that severe anxiety. Now, phobias are generally linked to objects or perhaps situations. So, for example, public speaking is quite a common phobia for a lot of people. Perhaps water or tunnels or certain animals can trigger those feelings of anxiety and fear. And those phobias, if they're not managed, if they're not controlled, can actually start to control that person's life and indeed their quality of life as well. Another anxiety disorder is OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And I have covered OCD on a show maybe about a year or so ago, and I was kind of talking about how we help people who struggle with OCD. I mean, OCD is thrown around in society these days so willy-nilly. You know, when we turn the light bulb on and off twice, we go, "Oh, I'm a bit OCD," or we check the front door's locked and we joke, "Oh, it's because I'm OCD." Actually, it's a lot more serious than that. The obsession bit is these thoughts or these images that people have in their mind that they're fearful of, and the compulsions are the rituals that they perform to control those obsessions. So these thoughts, these behaviours, can really control a person's life. They're often unwelcome. And the rituals can be so controlling to the person that it can become really out of hand. For example, if someone has OCD about germs, they may, or you know, hand washing, they may wash their hands many, many times a day, many times at the same time, because those obsessive thoughts are not put under control until they've performed those ritual behaviours, those compulsions. So you can see it's a lot more serious than just needing to switch the light bulb on and off a couple of times or check the front door's locked. These obsessive compulsive actions can actually control a person's life to a damaging degree. Another form of anxiety disorder is social phobia, or social anxiety disorder. And this is where people become really self-conscious in everyday social situations. They have this fear of being judged. They have this fear that they're embarrassed by the way they act or the way they look or the way they are. They're fearful of being humiliated. And what often happens in these situations is people tend to withdraw. And that then has a massive impact. If they're an adult, it can have a massive impact on their work and their social life. But equally, it's becoming more and more common with children as well. And children can withdraw and it can affect their school and their other activities. There is a condition called generalized anxiety disorder, or GAD, and this is characterized by chronic and exaggerated worry and tension. So some of the symptoms of GAD can involve things like trembling or twitching or nausea or irritability, perhaps poor concentration, maybe depression or fatigue. So very similar symptoms to general anxiety. But it is a recognised disorder. Panic disorder is a condition that where people have panic attacks and they have these feelings of terror that strike suddenly and repeatedly with no particular warning. So people that struggle with panic disorder, they might be very anxious, very fearful, and it's the fear of when the next attack will happen that makes them fearful as well. So they actually have a fear of the fear. The reassuring thing is that panic disorder is actually a fairly common condition. So if you do suffer with panic disorder, then you're not alone. And there is a route, or there's various different routes for treatment to help you. Interestingly, symptoms tend to begin in early adulthood. So it's not so common in children. And women are more than twice likely to develop panic disorder than men. And someone that struggles with panic disorder will generally get the same sort of symptoms that you would expect with an anxiety attack. So they feel that they can't breathe, that they don't have control. Maybe they've got chest pain, dizziness, nausea, perhaps a racing heartbeat. Now, some people will just have one attack. Others may develop into a long-term pattern of attacks. And like I said, it's this fear of the fear of the next attack, which then causes the attack. And you can see how the problem can be very cyclical. And also people that suffer with panic disorder commonly suffer from agoraphobia as well. So agoraphobia is this abnormal fear of open or public places and spaces. And the last one is PTSD. Now, most people think that PTSD just affects people that have served in the forces, where they've seen, you know, terrible events in warfare. But actually, PTSD affects people who have suffered physical abuse, maybe sexual abuse, maybe they've been through a car accident, maybe they've suffered some sort of natural disaster. So PTSD is this post-traumatic stress. So the trauma is not just related to warfare, it can be related to any trauma that we experience in our life. And people with PTSD might experience things like depression or commonly flashbacks. They'll have nightmares that will keep them awake at night. And they have problems with sleep quality and quantity. They may be irritable, they may be aggressive, they may resort to violence, they may feel a feeling of detachment from society. And those symptoms can be triggered by anything that reminds them of either the individual that caused the trauma or the event that caused the trauma. So panic attacks can happen at any time. If you suffer with panic attacks, you might feel that you're terrified, that you're overwhelmed. You might only have one or two and it may never come back. But if they do come back on a repeated basis, that intense fear of having the next attack can cause that fear of the fear. That's the time to maybe have an intervention and get some help. Talk to your doctor. And interestingly, these panic attacks can actually happen even whilst the individual is asleep. And these panic attacks are often not in proportion to the true situation. They tend to be brief. Most panic attacks last less than 10 minutes, although some can go on longer than that. And obviously, the more frequent they are and the longer they are, the more it causes a problem for the individual. So if you are a person that suffers with panic attacks, how do you deal with it? Well, the first thing is you need to reach out for help. So whether it's a family member or an understanding friend or talk to your doctor, realise that there is help out there for you to deal with the way that you feel and to deal with your panic attacks. And realise that although your symptoms are not frightening, they are an exaggeration of normal stress reactions. And in most situations, when people have panic attacks, the situation they find themselves in isn't dangerous, isn't harmful as such, but they feel that it is. Another way to deal with it is to face the feelings rather than trying to run away from them and trying to fight them. If you face the feelings, generally speaking, and you talk about how you feel, then those feelings will become less intense. Try and stay in the present, okay? Don't worry about what might happen in the future. Notice what is actually happening to you rather than what you think might happen, because that can just exaggerate the problem. A technique that some people find quite useful is to rate your fear level on a scale of 1 to 10 and watch it change. Often when someone's having a panic attack, an anxiety attack, the level will be quite high, but over a few minutes it will generally come down, which makes the situation easier to deal with. Another way people deal with it is simple things like counting backwards from 100 can often calm the mind down. Or, excuse me, some people put an elastic band around their wrist and they'll ping the elastic band because it then helps to distract the mind as well. And when this fear comes, when these panic attacks come, just accept it, expect it, reach out for people around you to help you to manage it, and realise that often within a few minutes it will start to subside and it will start to go away. And if you know someone that suffers with anxiety disorders, make no assumptions about how they feel. Ask them what they need. Don't surprise the person. Be predictable in their company. And actually, if you feel like you're with someone who's having a panic attack, the most important thing is to stay calm and for you yourself not to panic in dealing with them. If you're calm and you're ordered and you're measured, you will help them to control their situation better as well, and be encouraging and be supportive as well. So if you are struggling with any sort of anxiety disorder, if you get panic attacks, if you haven't reached out for help yet, then please do so. There is help out there for you. And it is important to reach out, because anxiety disorders, if they're not managed, if they're not recognised, that they can lead on to more serious conditions as time progresses. Okay, so after the first song, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Lorraine. And to take us there, it's a classic from the beautiful South.
I love you from the bottom of my pencil case. I love you in the songs I write and sing. Love you because you put me in my rightful place. And I love the PRS checks that you bring. Cheap, never cheap. I'll sing your songs till you're asleep. Upstairs I'll creep and write it all down, down, down. Oh, Shelley, oh, Deborah, oh, Julie, oh, Jane. I wrote so many songs about you, I forget your name, I forget your name.
Jennifer, Allison, Philippa, Sue, Deborah, Annabelle too.
I forget your name.
Jennifer, Allison, Philippa, Sue, Deborah, Annabelle too.
I forget your name.
Me why song for you.
Jennifer, Allison, Philippa Sue.
Song for you.
Jennifer, Allison, Philippa Sue.
That was The Beautiful South and A Song for Whoever. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. Quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, it's Search the Health Matters Radio Show. And you can listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, or on iTunes, on podcasts. Go to iTunes and search The Health Matters Radio Show. So on to our guest interview of today. We have Lorraine Crooks. And as I mentioned, Lorraine is from a business called Shelkey. And Lorraine is an energy alignment mentor and tantric massage practitioner. So we're going to find out more about what Lorraine does, how she got into doing what she does, and how perhaps she may be able to help you or someone that you may know. So good morning, Lorraine. It's great to have you on the show
good
this morning.
Morning.
And I'm really looking forward to finding out more about what you do, because I get lots of people on the show talk about sort of physical health and, you know, personal trainers and all that. And what you do is slightly out of the ordinary, in as much as it's not common. It's not a common theme to people that come on my show. So it's really good to have you on, and I'm really looking forward to the interview. So before we start talking about what you do now in terms of tantric massage and energy alignment, let's have a chat about your background. What brought you to that point? What's your history?
Well, it's been quite a journey. Initially, when I started work, I have worked in the training sector. So for 25 plus years, I've been a trainer, an educator, and for 10 years was a middle leader in a secondary school. So something very different to what you're talking about now. Mm. My area was mainly health and social care, so vocational subjects. But alongside being a teacher and a trainer and working in the FE industry, I had a secret double life, and that life was one of being on the swinging scene, enjoying aspects of kink, BDSM and fetish.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this real kind of, let's say, yin and yang, for want of a better phrase, two lives I was living. And around that was so much fear and shame and self-judgment, and some fun, but lots of...
So you kind of felt that there was the public persona.
Completely.
And then what you did in your spare time, you kind of felt had to be sort of hidden away from
Yeah, I guess it was the difference
knowledge.
Between my job and me.
Yeah.
One of them was kind of what I was doing, and one was what I was being.
Yeah.
And that was probably the difference for me.
Yeah.
But one of them was what people around me were very proud of, being a teacher, a good standing role in society. And the other was kind of one that was one of what I felt at the time was one of shame and fear, that people just wouldn't understand that there was this other side to me that I was exploring.
Yeah. And at the time, of those two personas, which one did you feel was you, and which one did you feel was almost the act?
Definitely the one where I was exploring my sexuality and me in that area of my life.
Yeah. Wow. So you were a teacher, you had this other side to your life, these things that you were doing in your spare time. You felt that fear, you felt that shame, which I'm sure many people listening can relate to. I think it's a lot more common than we would like to think in society. So what happened then? I think you got ill at some point.
Yeah, I had this kind of roller coaster of not sure what I should be doing, how I should be seen, and kind of had bouts of depression. And actually had the last bit really was I had some alopecia, and it was just like, okay, I need to make a decision here in life about what I want to do with my life.
Yeah.
So I had to choose really between being me and exploring my sexuality or maintaining my career. And I gave up my career. And I started exploring mindfulness and massage and kind of some other areas and things that I was interested in, mm-hmm. and built a small business from that, doing a little bit of training as well.
Mm-hmm.
I became a mindfulness coach, and just started really trying to understand about who I was, energy, connecting with other people in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found something called the Energy Alignment Method.
Okay.
And tantric massage, which was just a complete game changer, and allowed me to understand where the fear and shame was coming from.
Yeah.
And that was really where things started to change for me, and I built my business and changed my outlook on life.
Yeah, and changed the life as well.
Yeah.
So can you explain a little bit more about what the Energy Alignment Method is, and also tell us a bit more about actually what tantric massage is?
Yeah, so I'm really lucky because I can work with the two things within my job. So the Energy Alignment Method is, as it says on the tin, it's working with our energy to get us back in alignment. So mm-hmm. lots of the things that I was struggling with are about my own thoughts and beliefs. They weren't actually a reality. They were just about the things that I believed that people would think about me, the thoughts that I was having about how I was perceived in society. They weren't actually a reality.
Okay.
And some of those had come from things I'd seen, lack of maybe sex education at school,
mm-hmm.
Maybe things to do with my upbringing. And it had come from all sorts of places. And actually, the Energy Alignment Method helped me release the beliefs, the emotions and the thoughts that I had about my sexuality and the things I was doing in my life and the fear and the shame around them, enabled me to stand in my own power.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things I needed to do was connect to my body. In the swinging scene, I'd disconnected from my body, and I needed to reconnect with who I was and find out about the pleasure and the joys of the person I was in the physical. And that's how the tantric massage really helped me to connect back to the physical. So the two just work really nicely together, releasing the fear and the shame,
mm-hmm.
but then actually finding out, what do I like? Who am I? What is it that I really enjoy about being me?
So Tantra itself, I mean, there's lots of, I think probably one of the most well-known people that practice Tantra is probably Sting.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly used to make quite a big thing of it publicly, which was great in all, you know, in terms of raising the profile. But I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what Tantra is.
So obviously you've got tantra sex, which is one thing, and then the tantric massage, which is something else.
Mm-hmm.
So the tantric massage is a really it's a surrendering experience. So you when you visit a tantric practitioner, it's an experience where you are supported in boundaries, in consent and communication, and it's where you receive. So it's where you allow yourself to explore your body.
Mm-hmm.
And surrender to someone else within the boundaries of the consent and the communication that you've shared.
Yeah.
And just explore the physical without any expectation, no goals, no end goals. And you can really connect to your physical, your skin, and the pleasure that you're getting and the sensations that you're receiving without this head stuff of being in a relationship where we often wonder, what should we be doing in return?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the expectations of somebody else? Because there is none. It's just about the moment, and it's very mindful and it's very honouring. And mm-hmm. there's lots of rituals and meditations and mindfulness that go with it. So you can really sink into your body and experience the pleasure of your physical self.
Mm. Excellent. So you'd left your job as a teacher. You'd gone down the route of it, the Energy Alignment Method and tantric massage. So the more you started to actually talk to people about these sorts of things, you must have realised that there's a lot of people that were feeling the same way.
Yes.
And had that, as you say, in your own words, that sort of life of fear and shame and of people judging you if it became public.
I think the one thing I've learned on my journey over the last few years is that social media, social conditioning and a lack of sex education or inappropriate sex education in schools is actually what most people have gathered their thoughts and beliefs from about their sexuality and what they think is okay and is not okay. And having talked to people want to know about my story. They're interested because actually a lot of people have held back from exploring these things because their fear of what people might say and how they might explore it, or that they have explored it and they want to talk to me about what they have explored and how exciting it is and actually the relief that they're not on their own and actually those things out there are quite normal. Sexuality is who we are. It represents every area of our life. It feeds into everything we do. And actually, if we don't share it and express it and talk about it, then actually we're holding back a really important part of who we are.
Yeah, that link is really important, isn't it? And so when you talk about social conditioning, we're talking about societal norms, what we consider to be normal.
Yes.
Yeah, and what society tells us we should be and what we shouldn't be.
Yes, completely. So it's how we perceive ourselves to be seen by others. There's certainly, in my career as a secondary school teacher, I wouldn't have been going into the staff room talking about my weekend on the swinging scene. Or if I'd indulged in some kink.
It'd be an interesting conversation, wouldn't it?
That should necessarily happen, but it's just the fact that I lived in that fear, that I felt so much shame about who I was.
Yeah.
And, you know, sexuality is quite a big topic. So whether it's about my sexuality as to whether I'm, you know, bi or straight or pan, or whether the lifestyle choices I choose to make with how I express that, isn't something that's an everyday conversation. And actually it's a huge part of us. You know, connecting with another human being in such an intimate way is a huge part. And actually, even in schools, children are taught about the fear factor of sex and not about the pleasure and the joy of it.
It is interesting. I think it's I know there's some countries that are fairly open talking about sex and you know, matters related to sex, but I think in the UK, I think, you know, there is certainly it's one of the things that unless you know someone really well, you just don't talk about. And it shouldn't be that way, should it? Like you say, it's part of who we are as human beings.
It's an important part of who we are. It's an important part of our everyday life, of how we connect. And sexuality isn't just about sex. It's about how we communicate with people, how we interact with people. You know, how we show up in the world, even how we dress and how we communicate and interact with others is all part of that. It's not just about those intimate...
It's not just the physical act, is
no,
it? There's a lot more connected to it.
Completely not.
Okay, so in relation to the energy alignment method and also the tantric massage, in what ways do you actually help people? What people come to you for help and guidance?
So the clients that come to me, sometimes we use just the energy alignment and sometimes we use the tantra and sometimes we use both.
Okay.
So it depends where people are at on their journey and what they're coming to me with. So certainly I've worked with some transgender clients and we've used both. So we've worked through the emotions and the beliefs and the fears that they've got in their energy that's not supporting them, and we've released those and worked with that. And then I've worked with those clients before and after their operation. So helping them transition between their before and after in their physical as they transition from one to the other. So one is very much working with the energy of the person and one's working with the physical. So someone that comes to me has maybe been through abuse, we might use both. Other people connect more that they've had counselling, they may have used some other therapies and some other modalities and just really feel like the connecting to the physical is the most important part for them.
Okay, excellent. And you can see how obviously the two are very much interconnected.
Completely. It's all energy, whether it's our physical, whether it's our thoughts and beliefs, it's all part of who we are and it's all the energy that we're connected to.
And when clients come to you for the first time, do they feel as you used to feel? Do they have that feeling of, you know, it needs to be a hidden part of my life? They have that feeling of, you know, shame or being prejudged by people?
Completely, and it's much bigger than that. Some of the people that I've worked with are disconnected from their partner because they feel fear and shame around sexuality, which might be something that happened in their childhood.
Okay.
People might have lost their connection to themselves maybe after a miscarriage or through the menopause. I work with quite a lot of men that have disconnected after broken relationships, so they've lost their home and their family, and they just really trying to connect back to their physical to understand what they want from life and from another relationship.
And do you often find that if you're dealing with one partner in a couple, that the way that they feel is often hidden from their partner as well, that their partner has no idea what's going on.
Which is, again, back to where we're not used to communicating how we feel in this type of energy about sexuality. It's a fear thing that we're going to face rejection if we open up and talk about how we fear. And actually, 99% of the time, that is just not the case. Actually, if we share it, it's often that the other person feels the same. And certainly the couples I've worked with, that once the communication and the dialogue's there and the freedom to explore this, it just completely changes relationships.
And how do you think social media, social media is quite a new phenomenon, in terms of sort of Facebook in particular, in the last sort of maybe 10, 12 years, it's become, I think Facebook's been around for about 15 years now, isn't it? But the last decade it's become particularly prevalent. How do you think social media generally has had an impact on these kind of societal norms and the way people feel? And
I think social media as a whole, whether it's Facebook, whether it's adverts, things we see on the TV, certainly TV programmes show different sides of sexuality. Some of it is portrayed in a positive way and some of it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And there is more opportunities to have those conversations, I think, through some of the things shown on social media. But there's also some TV programmes that just don't support a positive image of what we should be expressing and exploring within sexuality.
Yeah. Do you think as a society, particularly in this country, do you think it's becoming more socially acceptable to talk about these things now, or do you still think it's one of those things that is very much sort of, hidden under the carpet?
I think it's very much a taboo. I think I don't think that's changed. I know certainly having spoken to secondary school teachers, there's still this fear of them not being able to give the right information to the young people, because there's this, things have changed so quickly.
Yeah.
In what young people are facing around sexuality or sex education, that actually the gap is so vast that I think we need to be really supporting the young people to understand how they can move forward, so that basically I don't have so many clients.
So talking about your clients, obviously don't mention people by name unless you have their permission, but can you give some sort of real-life examples of the sorts of people that you've managed to actually help?
Well, when asked about my success stories, I think one of the most important things I think is that actually anyone that walks into the space that I'm sharing with them is a success, because actually they've been empowered enough to take some action and do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, some of the transgender clients I've helped have been amazing success stories in supporting them through the change and helping them connect to their physical, that they felt empowered to connect with the right people for them as they move forward in their transition.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with some ladies that have been through abuse and trauma in their physical body, and they've just come out the other side as complete butterflies, as they would explain. And some people have just found it difficult to connect to their physical body after relationship breakups. So they're quite fast. So the fact that they've even got to me, for me, is a success story. And there's lots of testimonials on my website and on my Facebook page of people that have shared their experience and how they've found it so profound and so supportive.
Yeah, excellent. So what are your plans for the coming year? Obviously, we are at the start of 2020 now, and indeed the start of the year and the start of the decade. But where do you see this year going for you?
Oh, I've got big plans for this year. I'm really excited about 2020.
Excellent.
I'm in the process of just finishing off a project for young people that I want to take into schools about boundaries, consent and communication, so that we've got young people that don't go through what I went through because they didn't have that opportunity and understand how important those three things are.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do a lot more public speaking. I'm starting an online program, which I'm just in the process of writing. And I've also just completed my some sex addiction training to look at, start working with sex addicts to help them understand where their energies come from, how they can move forward in their life. And also next month I'm going on some training to support potentially working with some sex offenders and understand for them how their energy is and how our past and our childhood and our upbringing and social media and lack of support and family relationships sometimes can not give us the best opportunities, which makes us become very confused about who we are as a person and sexuality as part of that.
Mm. It sounds like you've got a busy year ahead.
Busy year, yeah, that's the plan.
Fantastic. So just to recap, Lorraine, who are you looking for? Who would be your ideal client?
So a lot of my clients are middle-aged. At the moment, I predominantly seem to be working with men who are struggling just to connect to their physical and their energy, and just men that want to explore more of an energetic pathway and connect to their body and their energy. But it's really anyone that just wants a safe space to explore who they are, and with no judgment, no fear and no shame, coming to explore and try out in a safe space where there's no agenda, and they can move forward with understanding a bit more about who they are.
Excellent. And making people, or helping people realise that they're not alone.
Oh, 100%.
And, you know, from your own personal experience, when you were going through that, you must have felt like there was no one that you could really open up to and talk to.
No, and often actually what we find is the judgment is what we place on ourselves. Actually, other people, if you do have conversations with other people, a bit like you were saying about the anxiety and stuff earlier, it's just like if you open that conversation with somebody, you'll actually find that there are other people that feel the same, that have got the same thoughts and feelings, and have those conversations with the children, have our conversations with our young people, to allow them to voice where they're their understanding, because actually there's a huge shame of fear around sexuality that really doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, you just got to keep that communication open and just talk.
Yeah.
So if any listeners want to get in touch with you, if you've perhaps touched a chord with them, how can they make contact with you?
So there's my Facebook page, which is Shelkey, and my website, shelkey.com.
Okay. And how do you work? Do you offer introductory sessions? Do you do telephone conversations first?
Yeah, we can certainly have a consultation before, whether that's online or over the phone.
Okay.
And then come and share my space and we can explore where you're at and how we can move you forward.
Super. And what I'll do for you is when I do the post-show promotion, I'll put a link to your Facebook details on the social media as well for you.
Fantastic.
Excellent. It's been really, really interesting. Thank you for coming on the show this morning, Lorraine. It's been really interesting to find out more about what you do.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
After the break, we are going to go on and have a chat about vitamin K.
I'm going on during this time. I fear there's no one to save me. This all or nothing really got away, you're driving me crazy. I need somebody to hear, somebody to know, somebody to have, somebody to hold. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you numbed all the pain. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. I'm going under in this time. I fear there's no one to turn to. This all or nothing way of loving, gonna be sleeping without you. No, I need somebody to know, somebody to hear, somebody to have, just to know how it feels. It's easy to say, but it's never the same. I guess I kinda like the way you help me escape. Now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you loved. And I tend to close my eyes when it hurts. Sometimes I fall into your arms. I'll be safe in your soul till I come back around. For now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love. But now the day bleeds into nightfall, and you're not here to get me through it all. I let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love. To let my guard down, and then you pulled the rug. I was getting kinda used to being someone you love.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, search the Health Matters Radio Show. And you'll be able to listen to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk, and also on iTunes Podcast 2. So over previous shows, certainly towards the back end of 2019, we spoke about different types of vitamins. Now, lots of people have heard of vitamins, lots of people take vitamin supplements, and over previous shows, we've covered vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C, vitamin D, and also vitamin E as well. Now, the vitamins fall into different categories and different groups. Some are water-soluble, some are fat-soluble. Some, if you take too much, generally you'll excrete, and some your body will store. And if you go over previous shows, you'll be able to listen to each of those vitamin groups and find out a bit more about them. And it is important that you do know about them, because in some cases you can end up with a vitamin overdose, vitamin toxicity, if you consume too many fat-soluble vitamins. And equally, there's a lot of myths around vitamins as well. For example, a classic myth around vitamin C is that it stops you getting a cold. Well, actually, there is no scientific proof of that. What will happen is if you have a cold and you take vitamin C, it can reduce the duration and the severity of the cold, but it won't stop you getting one in the first place. So there's lots of useful information to go back on previous shows to learn a bit more about each vitamin group if you'd like to. So today we are going to talk about vitamin K. Now, vitamin K isn't actually a standalone vitamin itself. It's actually a group of compounds. And scientific research has suggested that the most important of these compounds tends to be vitamin K1 and vitamin K2. Now, vitamin K1 is obtained from leafy greens and some other vegetables. And vitamin K2 comes largely from things like meats and cheeses and eggs and animal-based foods. So when we consume vitamin K1, which is the vitamin K obtained from vegetable-based sources, the bacteria in our large intestines convert it into the storage form of vitamin K, which is vitamin K2. We then absorb that vitamin K2 through the small intestinal wall, and then it's stored in our fatty tissue and in our liver. So vitamin K is a fat-soluble vitamin. And without vitamin K, it has a massive impact on our blood clotting ability. And there is a chemical called prothrombin, and that helps our body to clot blood in the event of an injury or a cut. And it's also important for bone metabolism as well. And actually, when we come on to the subject of bone health, there seems to be a correlation between low intake of vitamin K and osteoporosis, particularly as we get older. Now, several studies have suggested that vitamin K supports the maintenance of strong bones. It helps to improve bone density, and it also decreases the risk of fractures as well. And there are links between vitamin K and improved memory in older adults. So vitamin K deficiency, there is some interesting research out there that has suggested that deficiency of vitamin K can affect memory, particularly as we get older, particularly over the age of 70. And also vitamin K is good for our heart. So aside from just helping with blood clotting, vitamin K could possibly help to keep blood pressure lower by preventing a condition called mineralization. And mineralization is where minerals build up in the arteries. And when minerals build up in the arteries, the heart has to pump harder to pump blood through the body. Now, mineralization naturally occurs as we get older. It's also a major risk factor for heart disease. So adequate intake of vitamin K has actually been shown to lower the risk of stroke as well. Now, vitamin K you generally can't get as a supplement. You can get vitamin A supplements and vitamin B and vitamin C and vitamin D, and in some cases vitamin E as well. But generally speaking, you won't get a standalone vitamin K supplement, because actually, if you have a good quality whole food diet, you'll generally get what you need in terms of vitamin K from the food that you eat. Because of that, vitamin K deficiencies are relatively rare, but there are certain people who might be at higher risk. So if you've got a condition where you've got a disease that affects the absorption of the nutrients that are from the food you eat, for example, if you've got active celiac disease or you've got Crohn's disease, you may possibly be vitamin K deficient. If you're taking any drugs that might interfere with vitamin K absorption, that could be a problem. And one of them in particular is blood thinners, and another is cholesterol lowering medication can interfere with vitamin K absorption. Obviously, if you're malnourished and you're not eating good quality food, if you're living on junk food and processed foods, then vitamin K may be a problem. And also the interaction with alcohol. If you're a heavy drinker, that might prevent you from absorbing vitamin K from your food. So as I mentioned, if you want to keep vitamin K levels healthy, you would generally get vitamin K from green leafy vegetables, so things like broccoli and spinach, particularly good for vitamin K. Also, vegetable oils tend to be high in vitamin K, and whole cereal grains, not processed cereals, but as whole cereal grains are also high in vitamin K as well. As I mentioned, you can get some from meat-based sources. Tends to be vitamin K2. My advice is try and get them from vegetable-based sources if you can. And in terms of intake, well, the recommended adequate intake for vitamin K does depend on your age and also on your gender as well. So adult women should be looking to consume around 90 micrograms a day, and men around 120 micrograms. And again, you will get that from your diet if you eat a varied and balanced diet. And because it is fat soluble, so along with vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin E, and obviously now vitamin K, fat soluble means that your body will store them in your liver and your fat cells for future use. So you don't necessarily need it in your diet every day, but you do need to keep it topped up. And in terms of taking too much, well, like I said, vitamin K is not generally a standalone supplement, and there's not a lot of research that's gone into vitamin K overdoses. So like I say, if you get it from a balanced diet, generally speaking, your body will deal with that. If you are taking vitamin K supplements, and there are some available, but they are quite rare, then you might want to have a chat with a healthcare professional about that, because there is no safe maximum dose. So the research on vitamin K is still ongoing. There you go. Vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, and now vitamin K. I hope you found that information useful. So if you would like to come on the show, as Lorraine has done today, and talk about what you do, how you got into doing what you do, and how you can help people, if you'd like to be a guest on a future show, then please make contact with me via my website, and we'll see about getting you on a future show as a guest. If you'd like to connect with me between shows, then please go to the show's Twitter feed or the Facebook pages if you'd like to drop me a message. And equally, if you'd like to contact me away from the show and away from social media, then you can do by going to my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Go to the contact page and you can drop me an email. I'd like to thank Lorraine for coming on the show once again.
Thank you.
And like I said, I will put Lorraine's contact details on the post-show promotion that I do on social media in the coming days. So all that's left to do is to thank you for listening and to wish you a great week ahead. So until the same time next Monday, have a happy week, have a healthy week, and I will catch you again next week.
Is a bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you'd find. Thank you.
take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Clearing